Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. And I'm your host, John Hansen, and today we have an interview with an old school bodybuilder from the 1970s. His name is Joey Folco, and Joey won the Teenage Mr. USA way back in 1979, I believe. And it was a really fun interview because Joey is a real old school bodybuilder, sort of along the same lines as John DeFendis and Jerry Scalise, because he grew up in New York. He trained at Steve Mihalek's Mr. America gym. And so he's got some great stories of Steve Mihalek and that gym. We had a really good conversation. So I really enjoyed meeting Joey. I, of course, knew about him because I read about him in the magazines when I was a kid. And I used to look at all the teenage bodybuilders back in the days when the teenage contests were very, very competitive. Joey, I actually saw him on an interview with Lonnie Teeper because Joey's daughter just started competing and she was competing in a contest in California that Lonnie was promoting. And her name is Joey also. I think I mentioned this on the show last week. It's spelled J-O-I-E. And Joey, her father, was there. And then when she said her name was Joey Folco, Lonnie right away, being the historian that he is, he said, oh, I remember a guy named Joey Folco who was a bodybuilder. And she said, yeah, that's my dad. So I became friends with Joey on Facebook, and then we were able to do the interview. So it's a really fun interview. I'm sure you guys are going to love it. And I want to mention right off the bat that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's also the brand I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner Vintage Burn, which is the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner, or Vintage Blast, their two-stage pre-workout, or Vintage Brawn, the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banut and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order at oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. And I believe I mentioned this last week or the week before, Old School Labs now has a whole line of products for keto dieting. If you're trying that keto diet, check out oldschoollabs.com and see what they have to offer. All right. And I'll tell you what, guys, I am having so much fun reading these old magazines that I got from my parents' house about a week ago when I was in Chicago. These Iron Man issues from the late 1970s, early 1980s are so much fun to read. There's so much great stuff in there. And reading about these old bodybuilders again, I feel like a kid. So today, since I really enjoyed reading that article last week about Frank Zane's 1977 Mr. Olympia win by Roger Schwab, our friend of the show, who's been a guest on our show, like I said, probably about five times already. So when I was growing up, I remember Roger because I read all of his articles in Iron Man. He wrote every year at the Olympia when he was a judge. He would write an article about it. And being right up there in front, he had the greatest perspective of anyone. So I figured since the last one last week was so much fun to read, I thought I would read the 1978 Mr. Olympia, which Frank Zane won his second Mr. Olympia, and also written by Roger Schwab. So when we get done with our interview with Joey Folco, I'm going to read that article. And this is from the January 1979 issue of Iron Man. Our friend Richard Baldwin is on the cover doing a side tricep shot on the beach, and a picture taken by our another friend, Wayne Galash. So I'm going to read that article from Roger about the 1978 Mr. Olympia. And then John Carl Meese, who was from Florida, who was a promoter and also a photographer, he was at the show, and he took a lot of these pictures that are in the magazine. Some great, great shots from the 1978 Olympia. And John Carl Meese wrote an article called How I Saw the Olympia, Impressions of an Iron Man Photographer. So I'm going to read that one also. It's a little shorter, but it's also another perspective of the Mr. Olympia. So I think you guys are going to enjoy that. I tell you what, I'm having a lot of fun reading these things. It's really, really great. And we're supposed to do our second year anniversary this week, but I am having trouble with my laptop. It's been in the shop for a couple of weeks. So I'm supposed to get it tomorrow night. So when I get it, I will put that show together for next week. And we will celebrate our second anniversary here at the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Can you believe we're going into our third year already? It seems like yesterday we started this thing, but time flies by. So look forward to that next week, guys. And hopefully you'll enjoy that. I'm going to pull up some old interviews that were my favorite interviews for the last year. And we will splice some of those together and we will play that for you next week. All right. What else is going out in your world? The Mr. Olympia, of course, is getting closer and closer. We are only probably about 2 months away right now because, well, I think it's the middle of September, so maybe 9 weeks away. So that'll be here before you know it. I will be going out there courtesy of Old School Labs. They are sending me out there. I don't think they're going to have a booth this year, but me and Samir Banute and Tom Platz will all be hanging out, and we will be checking out the expo and also going to the contest. So that should be exciting. Sean Roden, last year's winner, looked like he was going to blow it because he looked like he was really out of shape, but he is quickly getting into shape. And Dexter Jackson is looking amazing. He's going to be going into the Tampa Pro, which will be out here in Tampa the first weekend in August. So I'll be sure to check that one out. And Brandon Curry is looking good. The Arnold Classic winner this year, he's looking really good. So I don't know if Phil Heath's going to do it or not. I think if he doesn't do it, he's not going to get it back next year, in my opinion. But if he doesn't have that hernia fixed, or if he doesn't have his problem with the stomach fixed, I also don't think he's going to beat Sean Roden, or he's going to win the contest. So that'll be interesting. There's always talking about Kai Greene going in it, but I don't think he'll be in there either. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Then you got Raleigh Winkler, of course. You got William Bonick. They're always going to be up there too. So it's kind of wide open. It'll all depend on what kind of shape Sean Roden's in and who else shows up. We'll see if Phil Heath comes back. So it'll be interesting. I think Big Ramy is out, so I don't think he'll be in it. So we will see what happens. All right, last week we had an interview with Ruth Silverman, and I did get a couple comments on Facebook, so I will read those here. A couple of these people, it looks like they didn't really listen to it. They were just commenting. Pete Pingle says, I've been looking very forward to this, John. I can't wait to hear it. My friend Pete Fancher said this should be a good one. And then the great Lee Haney, 8-time Mr. Olympia, made a comment. And he said, this is great. Two of bodybuilding's most valuable historians. And I thank Lee for saying that. And Ruth Silverman said, thank you so much, Lee. It means a lot coming from you. My friend Mona Rich said, I love all the ladies. I will listen. Awesome. Tom Terwilliger says, I ran into Ruth at the Olympia last year. She's still amazing. I can't wait to hear the interview. And Ruth said, Tom, that was an unexpected treat. Pat Neve said, great interview. Ruth was well informed. Michael Cox said, nice. And Ruth herself made a comment. She said, John, thanks so much for the opportunity. It was a lot of fun. These pictures bring it back. The image of Corey explains everything. Because I made a little collage with Corey, Carla Dunlap, Rachel McLish, and Bev Francis to show the interview. Baywa Nair said, I hope you get enough appreciation for the great work you do, John. Keep rocking. And Timo Mendo said, Corey Everson and Rachel McLish, my two all-time favorites and most sexy competitors ever. So those were some of the comments we got on the show with Ruth. Then I got another email from Steven. And Steven says, hey, John, I'm a huge fan of the show. I'm probably one of your younger listeners, 24 years old. Wow, that's great. It's great to hear how all these guys dieted and trained. I try to emulate their strategies because the 70s and 80s bodybuilders had the ideal male physique, in my opinion. A few interviews I'd like to hear are Eddie Giuliani, Bob Paris, Flex Wheeler, and Kevin Livroni. You mentioned Frank Zane could be starting his own podcast soon. Any new information on that? Thanks for all the countless hours of stories. It helps getting through a long night at work. All right. Thank you, Steven. Thanks for listening to the show. That's great. 24 years old, and he's listening to the Bodybuilding Legends. No, I have not heard anything about Frank Zane's new podcast. So I follow him on Facebook, but haven't heard anything. That was about a month ago I heard that he was starting his own podcast. Somebody said that. Eddie Giuliani, I will try again. Unfortunately, I don't have his number, but I know Phil Williams knows him because he sees him in the morning at Gold's Gym because Phil works out very early. Phil works out about, I think, 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning when the gym first opens. And Eddie is there right at that time because when I was in California last year, I trained with Phil a couple times and we saw Eddie Giuliani there and I mentioned to him about my podcast. He had no idea what a podcast was. So I keep bugging Phil and I'm like, hey, can you ask Eddie again? He keeps asking him, but I guess he's not ready. So I don't know. We'll just keep trying. Bob Paris, I don't think Bob is interested in doing an interview on bodybuilding. Some of his posts I've read on Facebook, he just doesn't want to talk about bodybuilding for some reason. He just seems like he wants to forget about that part of his life, which is really a shame because he's so popular and he has so many fans. And I think the interview would be a very positive one, but unfortunately, he doesn't really seem to be into it. Flex Wheeler, Kevin Lavrone, those guys are more in the 1990s. Maybe I'll reach out to them, but I try to focus on the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s, what we call the golden age of bodybuilding. But it might be interesting to talk to those guys too. So maybe we'll try that. But I'm trying to get some of the older bodybuilders from the old school days. So we will see. I'm also going to try and get some more of these women bodybuilders. But again, a lot of them aren't responding to me. So I'll just keep trying, guys. I can't believe some of these people are so hesitant to do an interview because I thought that would be a great part of their life and they would want to talk about it. But a lot of people don't want to do interviews. So I'll just keep trying. We'll keep plugging away as we move into our third year. All right, before we get to our interview with Joey Fulco, 1979 teenage Mr. USA, I also want to mention that we are brought to you by our other sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number out here in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can visit them at their website, FLAlternativeMeds.com, and mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they will give you a free consultation, plus they will give you 20% off your order. They also have a product called the Magic Pill. It is developed and backed by science. It's a formula that was made by chemists and expert formulators who are working with Florida Alternative Medicine. It's a revolutionary fat-burning product, and it's getting rave reviews from athletes all over the country. So if you want to order a month's supply of this amazing fat loss pill and thermogenic, it is $39.99. You can call Florida Alternative Medicine at that same number, 813-922-8939. I don't believe it's on their website, so just call them at that number, 813-922-8939. All right. Thank you, Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs, for sponsoring another episode. And here is our interview with old school bodybuilder Joey Fulco. You're going to love this. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And on this week's show, we have a very special guest. His name is Joey Fulco. And Joey was one of the top teenagers in the country back in the 1970s. And he won the overall at the Teenage USA. So welcome to the show, Joe.
Thank you for having me. I'm very, very special, very honored to be speaking with you. Great stuff, man. Very, very happy that you have this podcast. It's wonderful.
All right. So, yeah, I saw you on Lonnie Tieper had a show a week or two ago, and your daughter was in the show, and then he brought you over, and he talked to you about your bodybuilding career. And, of course, I remembered your name from back in the day. How long has your daughter been into it, Joe?
She's only been into it about, oh my goodness, I'm going to say about maybe 8 months, 6 to 8 months.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She's a professional entertainer. She sings. She's a songwriter. She plays guitar and piano. And she had gotten into, believe it or not, MMA fighting on the side to get in shape. And then she got real smitten with the bodybuilding, you know, way of life and how we do things. And she wanted to enter a show. So she came to me. I think it was Jake Cutler's Desert Classic was the first one.
Okay.
You got to remember, I've been out of the sport for a lot of years.
Mm-hmm.
So when I, you know, got reacquainted with it again full time, you know, like looking at it, I said, wow, it's really changed. It must have gone through the roof since I competed. And mm-hmm. I said, let's do it. So I put her on a regimen. We started training, and hers is like more in the fitness category right now.
Yeah.
And she did really well. She took home a couple of trophies, and then she went to the second show, and the Tipper show. And it's been great, man. She's learning, you know, it's a brand new thing for us. You could see the excitement on her face because you could see the transformation of not being a bodybuilder and being in that, you know, that the calculations and what we have to do to get there. And all of a sudden you see it. It's just so exciting when your body changes.
Yeah, Lonnie had her sing a little bit, and then you joined her. That was great. You guys sung together.
And you know what's so funny? Because her name is Joey, and she's a little different. You know, and so he says, wait a second, there's a Joe Fulco from was a bodybuilder back in the day. And she was like, yeah, that's my dad. So it was like serendipity, you know. It was really cool.
Right, right. So did she know anything about your bodybuilding career before?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just from pictures. Uh-huh. And, you know, it's really funny. I don't speak about it much. Like, it's not the type of topic that I boast about. Mm-hmm. I was really fortunate and had a lot of success, like, fast, if you will.
Yeah.
It came to me, you know, bodybuilding in general came to me very easily. The work was hard, as you know, it's strenuous. But, like, I did really well at it really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was only in it, like, I got into it on October 14th, 1976. My mother joined me up at the gym. It was actually Steve Mahalik's Mr. America's gym on Long Island. And then I won the show. I started competing in 78. I won the USA in 79, along with a host of other shows. And then I was pretty much out of it in like 81.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me about the beginning, Joe. How did you get into it? Like, what got you interested in bodybuilding? And then you started right off at the Mr. America gym, right, with Mahalik?
Yeah, so it was really interesting. What happened was, years ago, my mother bought me a weight set when I was a kid. I must have been, I don't know, maybe 13, 14 years old. I remember being in my basement, and it was a little green easy curl bar. And I just started doing, like, arm curls and some goofy stuff, and I really, really saw, like, fast. Like, my arms started getting, like, bigger. And what happened was, I was reading a magazine once, totally unrelated to bodybuilding. And in the back was a picture. And I didn't know at the time who it was. It just said, I believe, 1972 Mr. America, Steve Mahalik. Hmm. So I cut out the picture. I put it in my wallet. And I literally had that, John. You got to believe me. I had that picture in my wallet for years.
Wow, that's crazy.
And I would always look at it. Yeah, and I said to myself, and this is the term I use, because I still remember to this day. I said, someday I want to be a muscle man. And the term muscle man had some you know, like cachet, if you will.
Yeah,
and
I was like,
I want to be a muscle man. And I always looked at it. I remember those Bob Hoffman pictures with the kid kicking sand in the face.
Right.
You know, all those old time in the Hoffman vitamins and the Dan Lowry stuff. So it was such a different type of thing. And one day, a girl had broken up with me, and I was just scratching the ass of being 16. And I remember I said to my mother, I want to join a gym. I'm going to show her, because the girl broke up with me. Right. She wouldn't let me train in a gym until I was 16 years old. And she said to me, because your body's not ready yet. She says, your bones are still growing. This was her philosophy.
Yeah.
So on October 14th, which was my birthday, she bought me a gym membership, and hence that's how it started from there on.
Wow. So you didn't know Steve was from New York, right, when you cut this picture out and put it in your wallet?
No. So what happens is, this is where the story gets interesting.
Yeah.
I go into the gym, and my mother signs me up. When I walk into the gym, there's a guy there behind the desk who was used, named Bob Gardner. I'll never forget him. On the desk was a sign-in pen that was attached to a hypodermic needle. And I didn't know what that meant.
Right.
But it was more of a tongue-in-cheek type of thing, because everything that I'll tell you more about that, but the pen, I just looked at it, I didn't know what that meant. So
right.
I find out, and then somebody tells me that it's owned by this Mr. America, and he trains in the morning. And I said, oh, okay. So you want to be the best, get to the best. Well, I kept showing up. Matter of fact, I have this on video on Betamax, believe it or not. I show up at the gym, and Steve Mahalik is really antsy. He's really annoyed. It's like 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'm banging on the door, and he's like, what do you want? Who are you? I said, I just joined the gym. I want to train. And he was like, the gym doesn't open until like 9 o'clock. Get out of here. I said, no, but I want to train with you. He looked at me like I was out of my mind. He kept throwing me out, saying, get out. And I kept coming back and coming back. I think it was after the third or fourth time, he said, man, you really, because I told him I want to be Mr. Teenage USA, Mr. Teenage America, whatever terminology I used at the point. Because I didn't really know the terms then. You got to remember.
Right, right.
And he said, wow. He says, I guess you do want to be Mr. America, Teenage Mr. America. He says, all right, come on in. And he let me come in. And that was the first session I had, training session with him. And then from there on in, man, I just put my head down and I took my bike. I drove every morning, trained, and then went to school and came back at night. And then the stories just blossomed from there, being under the tutelage of Steve Mihalik, you know.
So what was that first workout like? Did he try to kill you?
No, I think you know, I had just started. He knew there was no way I was going to keep up with him. I'm a pretty 16-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he had me do, you know, a whole bunch of stuff, put away that, do that, just do some bench press, you know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And then I believe, if I remember correctly, he wrote out some stuff for me to do. And that's all I needed to do. And then I started watching. And, you know, you catch on quick once you learn the protocol of the gym. Because, you know, in those days, it's not like today.
Right.
It's very,
totally different.
Very, very rough around the edges. Mm-hmm. And, you know, no bullshit, if you will. And Mihalik was excessive, almost OCD-like in his approach of training.
Yeah.
I could come to realize that he would literally do 75 sets per body part.
I know, that's what I heard. That's crazy.
Yeah, true. And we didn't know any better, so. And I'm not suggesting it's wrong. You know, obviously I'm blessed to have had that experience.
Yeah.
But you just do what you think you're supposed to do. And that's what we did. But at really insane intensity levels.
Yeah. So you know? You're 16 years old, and then you're training in the morning, so you're going there before school. Did you keep up that routine, Joe, or did you eventually start going back at night, or?
So this is what happened. So I kept up the routine. I went home, and I told my parents I can't do school anymore, and my father was going to go through the roof. So I had to write a letter to my principal. Yeah, I had to write a letter to my principal and the school board. It was a whole big deal, and they actually let me graduate a half a year earlier. This is when the 78, 79 rolled around.
Okay.
And I would keep up the regimen for 77 and 78. I went to school early in the morning. You know, I mean, I would train early in the morning, and I would go to school. I think school started like 7:30, 8 o'clock, went to school. School was over 3 o'clock, went back to the gym. So everything was gym in the morning, school in the afternoon, gym at night. That was the whole day.
Wow, you're going twice a day then when you're a teenager.
Yeah, twice a day. Yeah, wow. I mean, and there was no place else to go. And, you know, once you started making friends and companions, you know, it's easy to say, hey, we're going to be at the gym. You guys are going to come tonight. So, yeah, I'll be there. And even if it was just hanging out.
Yeah,
You sit on a machine. You know, and just do like, you know, leg presses just for nothing, or just do leg, you know, calf raises just to do really, even might not have been a workout. You just did it because you were there.
Right.
So it was kind of like ancillary.
Did you start to, you know, form an idea of what you wanted to do as far as competing? Like, did you have a contest you wanted to go in? Because back then, everybody wanted to win Mr. America, you know?
Yeah. And for me, I'll be honest with you, for me, it was always the teenage show.
Oh, really?
Like,
okay.
I got the teenage thing was cool to be. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I ever said I'm going to be Mr. Universe or I want to be Mr. Olympia. Like, I don't think that those shows, I wasn't smitten with those titles. The teenage something or other at that time had a lot of, like, you know, cachet to me, you know, Teenage USA, Teenage Mr. America. Wow, that's crazy. Like, imagine being that guy at a teenage, and I think a lot of it was self-insecurity and being able to go back to school and think I'm the teenage winner.
Yeah.
You know, no one's going to know that you're a winner above and beyond school once you leave. You know, like, I didn't perceive it that way.
Yeah.
You know, I want the people to know that I think it was back to being an adolescent, and you know how that is when you're a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So the teenage had some meat behind it, and I went. And it's funny because when I entered a whole bunch of shows before. I think it was the Northeastern America, it was called, and I came in second. I think it was in my class. And then
what year was that, Joe?
That was in New Jersey or Pennsylvania. It was called the Northeastern America. That was the name of the show.
Okay.
And then it was the Eastern Seaboard, and I believe that was in New Jersey. And now you know there was Mr. Suburban, and I won those two shows in the teenage division.
Okay.
And then they slowly started putting me in. Okay, you got to go into the open. You know, like, that was the thinking because you entered both.
Yeah.
And I entered, and I think I came in like second in those opens, but won the teenage shows. I always won, like, you know, you remember when they used to have body part?
Oh, yeah, sure.
And they don't, I don't see that anymore today, which is
no, they don't do that no more.
Yeah, and I do have later on, if you don't mind. There's so much you do want to say about today's type of competition, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I always took home most muscular and best arms. Like I won a multitude of times those shows. Like I won those trophies. So when I won my class. I won the overall. I won most muscular. And I won best arms. So those I always came home with like 3 or 4 trophies.
Yeah.
And then in 78, I won. I competed in the Teenage USA, which was in Pennsylvania, and I lost, and I was devastated. Matter of fact, that was the year I met Muhammad Ali. And believe it or not, I went to his training camp a day before the show, and kidding around, he smacked me in the face. I said to him, I went to his training camp. I said, man, I thought you'd be a lot bigger, champ. He says, bigger? He says, stand up. And I stood up and he smacked me. I was like, oh my God. He goes, sit down, you guys. He goes, give me a picture. And his manager gave him, trainer gave us a picture, an 8x10, and he signed it to Joe. Good luck in your bodybuilding show, Muhammad Ali. And
I remember that's wild. Saying,
yeah, and I remember leaving there saying, man, I don't even care if I win the bodybuilding show. Muhammad Ali just smacked me in the face.
Right. Where was his training camp at?
I think it was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, it was surreal to be in front of him. It was just me and him, this other kid who was with me and his trainer. There was just the 4 of us.
Wow, no kidding. That's unbelievable.
And I waited for him for hours because when I first got there, he'd finished his training and his coach said, or trainer said, champ's going to be going to bed, guys. I'm sorry you can't see him today. And I said, oh man, can I wait? He said, no, he's not going to be getting up till dinner time, bro. So I waited. I waited all day. I mean every bit of like 5 or 6 hours I waited.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, like 4 or 5 o'clock rolled around, and he came out. And the guy saw that we waited. He was so kind. He's like, okay, come on in. You can meet him real quick. And he brought us into his like little kitchen area, little dining room, and he sat down with us. And he gave us a good 5 or 10 minutes of his time.
Damn. Now was probably close to the end of his career, right? 78.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. He was winding it up at that point. He was getting ready for a fight. And if I'm not sure who he was going to fight, but if I look in history, I'll find it because it was in probably August around, it was in 78 because I lost the show. I remember when I came back and I was devastated that I lost. And I said, okay, now I'm going to win the show next year, which, you know, I went to train the next day. I went back home and I started training for 79 USA.
Who won the Teen USA in 78?
You know something? I forget his name who won that show.
Mm-hmm.
That was a blur for me when I lost. I was absolutely ready to jump off a bridge.
Wow, really?
In my mind, I really, really, like I was manifesting, you know, winning was it, losing wasn't even an option.
Yeah. Casey Kacharek, yeah. Yeah.
I think he might have won.
I'm looking it up now, and he did win, yeah.
Okay, so there you go. So it just came back to me. He won the show. You got to remember, some of it is foggy, man. We're going back a lot of years.
Right, yeah. And it says Michael Antorino and Jerry Scalise were on that show.
Yep, I think they entered too.
Yeah.
I don't know if Jerry had to be a teenager then. Yes, so Jerry Woman, I've been in that show too.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jerry's older than me by a year.
Okay. Now, what was your physique looking like at that point, Joe?
It was... Well, look, for all intents and purposes, it was okay to compete, but it wasn't gonna win.
Okay.
It wasn't gonna win. Now you got to remember, at that point, you know, I'm 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
My body's really, really starting to go through some changes, and now I'm discovering the effects of steroids. You know, which is a whole different conversation. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So now you go, you start going from being an adolescent type body to a hard type other body.
Yeah.
And with an extensive program. So things are going to change. So when I go back in 79, it's just going to be different. So my body was soft and I just wasn't developed.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still good because I was still winning shows.
Yeah.
Like I totally was compatible. You know, like I can compete. But I wasn't going to win.
Hmm. So
I'm not suggesting it was the steroids that made a difference. I think it was just the work. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a lot that goes into the equation, as you know.
Now, who were the guys in the gym that you were hanging around with at that time? Because, I mean, you had Defendus there at the time, right?
Yeah, John Defendus. Steve Mihalik. There were a lot of, like, Jerry Scalise I met, who was amazing. And just a lot of unknown guys, like just guys who had an infatuation with the sport, but maybe who never competed.
Yeah.
You know, and then there were other guys coming in and out, like Mike Quinn, that were really just wonderful guys. And your buddy Dryman, they started coming in through these. These are like really like top bodybuilding teenage type kids in my age bracket, if you will. Some older, some a little younger, but they were kind of in that the spirit of my age. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mihalik was he was older, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, Steve wasn't, was he competing at that point?
Yeah, okay, so here's the deal. He wasn't competing, he had some health issues.
Okay.
And I believe he had a car accident or something. He was
yeah, I remember the car accident.
Yeah, he always said he was going to compete and get ready for something. Like he always like really believed that. I think, because they called him the Phantom, you know? And I don't think he competed above and beyond 79, 80. I think he was pretty much, he wanted to, but I don't think he really entered anything. I think one of the night of the champions he went into, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yeah.
And you would probably know that history better than me if you looked it up. And I don't really recall what he did. I don't want to speak out of line. You know, I'm not sure. But I think it would have been a night of the champions type show.
Yeah, when I think of Steve Mihalik, it's almost like two careers, because he won the 72 America, and then I think he went over to the NABBA Universe. And then, like you said, he had that accident where I think didn't a garbage truck run over his car or something, and really messed him up. I mean, he could have died from that, I think.
Yeah, it was a pretty brutal thing, as I understand it. And so that was between the healing process and coming back.
Right.
And you got to remember, Steve Mihalik was he was very hardcore, man.
Yeah, yeah.
He was. I call him. He was a lifer. You know. He was a lifer.
So what was he like? Tell me some stories about Steve, because I had John Defendis on the show, and he told me a lot of stories. And he almost sounded, you know, like you said, he was obsessive, almost sounded crazy, you know, the way he pushed people and he pushed himself.
Well, look, there's a lot of stuff there. There's a lot of meat on that bone, bro. He could be very – Steve had two sides. He could be arrogant and so self-withdrawn, and he could be mean-spirited, and then he could be the greatest guy and the most helpful guy in the world and give you the greatest advice you ever had. There was no mediocrity with Steve. And I think that, in my personal opinion, Steve was tormented by a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I don't think the steroids and anything else he was on helped to find that middle ground. You know, back then, they didn't say, you know, he's like that or bipolar. We didn't even use terminology. I'm not suggesting it was. It wasn't. I don't know. But
yeah,
he and we attribute a lot of it to he was very serious. He didn't fuck around when you were in his gym. He was dieting a lot of the times. And quite frankly, Steve was a no-nonsense guy. He just didn't have time for bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were going to be around him, you either play by those rules or get out. It was really simple. But you knew where you stood with him. You knew where you stood with him. So that's the way it was.
Now, what did he think of you? Because, I mean, you came there at 16 years old, knocking on the door at 6 in the morning. So, I mean, once you started to develop, I mean, what did he think of your physique and stuff?
He respected me. And a lot of what I was doing was on my own. Like, a lot of guys would buddy up together, and who would get help from outside sources, and who would – and I think I was like Steve in that way, where I preferred to do a lot of it on my own. Like, I've always been that type of kid. Even with my music, I taught myself. Like, I didn't do the lesson. You know, I listened to Steve, and I was starving for information and for knowledge, and I know he had it. And once I got what I needed, I took it and I ran with it, and I said, okay, I'll figure out the rest as I go.
Yeah.
I didn't need 24/7 coddling, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I knew, like, to me, let's use an arm curl as a metaphor for everything, okay? It's so direct what you have to do with an arm curl to build your bicep. Why would you fuck around with that? Do you know what I mean when I say that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's one movement. It's simple. That's the movement. So it's easy breezy stuff.
All right.
So once I knew, okay, I feel that hurts, then everything else was a derivative of that. So I tried to keep things simple. And I kind of just applied that to everything I did in life, as well as the training and body parts. You know, like if squats builds your legs and you go down and up, then why are you going on a machine laying down and, you know, like all this crazy stuff? I went to the gym with my daughter, one of these new gyms, and they got all these machines that move up and down. And back. I'm like, what? Why? Why are you moving your, like, it feels like a roller coaster. I'm like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Somebody must be bored.
Yeah, right. That's a great point. You know?
Get the fucking barbell, do the curl, shut up and do it. When you can't do anymore and you're ready to throw up, you're done. Wait 30 seconds to get on to the next one.
Right. Yeah, sometimes I look at some of these machines and I'm like, I don't think people who work out design these things because they don't do anything, you know?
No, or they're
made wrong.
No, John, you're right. And you know marketing and, oh, I got to get that one. Oh, do you have the new so-and-so? Oh, I got to get it. You know, so Jim, get it because they got to have, oh, we have 30 of the new line. You know, even when Nautilus came out, when I remember the Nautilus started coming, being fashionable in the late 70s or mid-late 70s, like even then, it was pretty direct and simple movements.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were like a leg extension machine was really effective. It was a simple movement.
Yeah.
All they essentially did was take a bench that had, where you put the dead weight on it. You know, was they put a chain with weights behind you, but that still worked.
Yeah.
You know, they made it easier to do. But it wasn't like some of these machines. I got to tell you, man, I feel like an idiot. I go into the gym and I see some of these machines. And I'm like, well, what does that do? Like, I'm asking. And you don't want to be, look, I was a bodybuilding champion.
Yeah.
Be like the word of advice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to know. And I'm walking with my daughter and I'm asking, I said, what does that do? She's looking at me like, Daddy, you were a bodybuilding champion. She knows. Like, I don't know what the fuck that does.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? I've been out of it too long, man.
Right.
Why you'd need that machine, you know?
Exactly, right. You don't need it.
I don't think so. I don't want to be that guy, you know? I don't want to take the wind myself.
What was the Mr. America gym like?
It was like a small dungeon type venue. Like when you walked in, okay, so figure a regular strip mall, small strip mall type place. You walked into the two doors in the foyer, in the vestibule, and there was a desk. And once you got through the desk and you signed, then you walked into this gym that was really small in comparison.
Okay. Yeah.
And then, you know, they had that one wall with the mirrors of all the dumbbells.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had, just past that, you had your traditional flat benches. And then you had like just some other apparatus in the middle. And then the other wall was like a Smith machine and maybe a deadlift type thing. So, and that was really it. And there was a water fountain.
Yeah.
Everything was black and brown wood paneling. Remember paneling?
Yeah. Yeah.
Everything was brown wood paneling.
Right.
It had those rubber inserts on the floor.
Uh-huh.
And you'd always hear this every 3 or 4 minutes. Don't drop your weight. Don't drop your weight. And it was so funny, man, because you never dropped your weight. And when you did, you got yelled at because, you know, you'd break up the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
You knew what you were doing. You didn't have to drop the weight. The Halleck said, don't drop the weight. You never drop. Because I owned the gym for 10 years there. After that, we opened up our own health club.
Oh, really? And, okay.
Oh, yeah. The East Coast Health Club. We ran it from 1980. Because I won in 79. We opened it in 80. And my family actually ran it for 10 years till 1990. When I got out of the sport, I left in like 86.
Okay.
To travel. But everything was, don't drop the weight. You know, because, you know, we wanted everything clean and neat.
Yeah.
You know, we were respectful that there might have been somebody. And, you know, you talk about stories with Mihalik real quick. And I'm sorry I got off track. But we'd be in the gym. And I have so many stories to tell you if you want to hear them. But
sure, yeah.
There was one guy training in the gym. I think his name was, they used to call him Snake Man. You know, we always gave people names.
Right. That's how my gym was, too. Everybody had a nickname.
Yeah. Everybody had a name, Snake Man. And he comes in, and the guy always had, he had his body wrapped up in all these, like, rags. He opened like a homeless guy. And he, you know, it was like he'd come in on a bicycle. And he walked in the gym. And, you know, Steve had no tolerance for that bullshit. What are you wearing these fucking towels for? Like, he's just couldn't get past it. Right. You know, Steve kind of just like looked at him like, okay, you go over to a machine and said, all right, you're out of here. That was his big line. He said, okay, you're out of here. And literally throw the guy off the machine. He said, get out of here, you're out of here. He says, what? You're out of here. He goes, look at this fucking guy. He was talking about me. He goes, this fucking guy's training for a show. You're out of here. Get out. And he would throw him off the machine, and I would get on the machine because we were doing supersets. And we'd go to another machine. There'd be somebody else on there says, get off. You're out of here. And you gotta remember, these are paid members.
Right.
And he didn't, get off. You're out of here. Can't you see this man training for a show? So that's what Steve had you covered. You see what I mean?
Right.
Like, and that's just, that was the protocol, man. And you knew that. But this is a really interesting story, man. We go to the gym one day, and we're just finishing up, like, these. We're getting, there's just two parts to this story. Steve's getting ready to do squats.
Okay.
And he's loading up the bar with, you got to believe me, every bit of 700 pounds.
No way, really? He was that strong.
Yeah, and what he's doing is he's really worried about the negative force.
Okay.
He's not worried about getting up as much as he's worried about a slow way down.
Okay.
And you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we have three spotters, two on each side, and I'm behind him. Steve's got his legs wrapped up. He got his hands wrapped up. The bar is loaded up. He's right in front of the squat machine. There's a mirror, and he's getting ready. And he's got his, you know, Steve always wore those, you know, those sneakers that, I'm trying to give you a visual. Those sneakers without laces, the loafer sneakers.
Okay, okay.
He's wearing those, got his gym pants. He's huge, gets on that weight. He's only going to do like three reps. He's going to come down three times, and they're going to lift it up for him three times.
Okay.
He's in the middle of his set. In the middle of that. Now, think about that scene.
Yeah.
Takes the weight off the bar. He walks back 2-3 feet. It's now on him. It's on his shoulders. And we're just waiting for him to do those three reps, four reps, and we're going to get lifted up, and he's going to go down and do it. And some kid comes up to him, some guy. He's like, hey, I have a question about about arms. If I'm doing like biceps, he turns his head like as far as you could turn it from having 700 pounds of squat on
your leg. Oh, my God.
Like, put the bar back. Put the fucking bar back. He never did the set. He went fucking ballistic. Guy was actually asking him a question during the actual.
Yes, he's backing up with 700 pounds.
God, I'm telling you, bro. If we're writing the movie and I'm telling you this is the scene, you're saying, yeah, that would never happen. It happened.
Right.
During his set, he's asking him questions. And listen, how are my biceps? Should I be doing like five sets? I was like insane questions during this time. And he was, put the fucking bar back. It was insane, bro. Listen, it was really craziness. And he threw the guy out of the gym. So we go back later, and Steve's at the gym, and he's not training. It's happening. So this kid comes up to Steve. What do I never forget? This man, this is the greatest. He says, I'm looking to bulk up, and I want to get bigger. And I, you know, what should I be eating? So Steve said, well, you got to superset pancakes. So he says, what? He says, pancakes. You got to superset pancakes. He goes, I don't understand. He says, you do a set. He goes, you run across to the diner, eat a couple of pancakes, and you come back. He said, and you do more sets, and then you go back. He goes, and then you got to run around the building like three times.
Oh, God.
What? Yeah, look, dude, I am not kidding you. And actually, the guy actually did it. He went to the diner. He ordered pancakes. He started eating pancakes. He came back into the gym. He started doing this. Come on, Steve's yelling at him. You're going to be a champion. You're going to be a champion. Five more. Just go back and eat them. Go back. And the guy ran across the street where Eddie ate his bed. He came back. We were laughing.
And of course, everybody's in on the joke, right? Everybody's cracking up.
In on it. And this guy's really doing it, bro.
Yeah.
And this was Steve's head's humor. And, you know, he had a great audience because to him, to us, he was God. You know, he was the
king. Yeah. Yeah, he was the man. So, yeah.
And we're a kid. And he thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And he's like, you're going to be a champion. He goes, look at you. You look a man. You're getting bigger. You're huge now. It is nothing. You wait till you're done with the next stack of pancakes. You know.
Oh, man.
And this And he constantly did this when he was in a good mood, but like he'd be goofy.
Yeah.
But, and there's just stories like this he would do, you know, and it was crazy, man. Cause we knew.
Yeah. Yeah, the gym atmosphere back then, I try to describe it to the younger guys today, and they can't even imagine it, you know, because the way the gyms are today, it's just not the same anymore. It's just a totally different look, you know, totally different atmosphere.
Well, it's a social club now.
Yeah.
You know, look, do you remember, where are you from originally?
Chicago.
You're in Florida now, right?
Yeah, I'm originally from Chicago.
Okay, so I don't know if they had this. Do you remember Holiday Spa?
Well, we had the Chicago Health Club up there, but it's probably the same thing.
Okay, so what happened was, Mihalik's gym was a different breed, obviously, but those were the gyms of the day.
Okay.
New concept that opened up called Holiday Spa. Holiday Spa. And what happens is you join, and that's when it started with that 1 month free and you know, lifetime membership and all that, and you had to wear and the trainees all wore blue shirts.
Mm-hmm.
With the same, you know, it was very clinical,
yeah,
if you will. And you had to show your membership card, and they had the sauna, and they had a steam bath, and and that was the first wave of where it is now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I put you on a routine with a piece of paper and check off leg. You know, it that started it off, and that was in the mid 70s. And
chrome weights.
I remember it. I remember because I have friends of mine who worked there.
Okay.
Everybody was like, "Oh, you should get a job at Holiday Spa." And I was like, "Listen, it was the last place I'm working." Like you got to remember, we were basement guys. You know, we were guys who trained in the garage. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
It was. I get the word would be raw. We were raw.
Yeah. So yeah.
Those
exactly.
are the places that took on their own life, and then when people realized, you know, the big corporations, we can make money and get ladies, because ladies really put it on the map.
Mm-hmm.
With respect to the bodybuilding, to the whole sport in general, and I still call it sport. I remember Rachel McLeish and all these girls, and Gladys. I forget these women's name, but they really made it fashionable
mm-hmm.
when the women got into it. Because look, I remember the days when people said, "I'm going to be a bodybuilder." They used to equate that with like wrestling, like fake wrestling,
mm-hmm.
and like midget throwing and bodybuilding.
Right.
You know, it was that type of thing.
It was in that group, yeah.
And we were always coupled together with those in that world. And then when the girls came in, it made it like, oh, this is okay to do this to build muscle and get in shape. It was like, oh, mm-hmm. okay. So
yeah.
It's like credible. Yeah. That's when it started making so now as we know it today.
Yeah. Did you guys have a lot of pros come through there? Like if they were going through New York and they would stop at Steve's gym?
Yeah. And I missed a lot of it. Samir Banute was a good friend of mine. I met him when I was out on the coast, and he wound up staying at my house.
Oh, really?
He stayed at my house for a day or two. I went to California to train, because I trained in L.A., Santa Monica. When I won 79, my dad sent me there. When I went to win, he gave me some money, and I went to Santa Monica. That's when I won in 79. There, I met all the top guys. But in New York, I don't recall meeting a lot of the top guys. I'm sure they were coming in because they knew Steve to New York one time. I know a couple of guys made it to the gym, but I wasn't privy to that. I missed a lot of that.
Okay. Okay. So, Joe, you mentioned the steroids after 78. So I'm sure a lot of the guys were on steroids in the gym, because I remember the gyms I trained at in Chicago. I mean, you would see guys shooting up in the locker room, and, you know, everybody who wanted to look big was doing them because they were legal. They were easy to get. You know, the guy at the front desk would be selling them or whatever. So what – You made your decision then to start them in 79 then, for that 79 Team USA. Right?
I think it was the tail of 78, you know. But yeah, and I had easy access, like you said, which is spot on. You're right. So here's the thing. There was, and you know, man, because we were younger people back then. There was no fear, and there was no knowledge. Wow, what are you taking? You know, we didn't say, what are you doing for your legs? We'd say, what are you taking?
Yeah.
You know, we couldn't say, like, well, what do you mean, what am I taking? I'm doing fucking 75 sets of arm curls. Yeah, but what are you taking? You know what I mean?
Right.
So, it was a wry type of thinking. But when you're a kid and you're 17 and you're 18, you go, man, did you see so-and-so? He's getting huge. Mm-hmm. He's getting huge. Wow, what's he taking? You know? So we slowly started experimenting at a fast pace. So, and then I'll give you a little bit of history of what I, okay, Dianabol, but a lot of Dianabol.
Mm-hmm.
Winstrol V, testosterone propionate, cypionate. We were all on those, I call them the basics.
Okay.
The staples. Anavar, and Anavar was really to get hard before a show because it didn't retain mm-hmm. as much water. So we knew what, and I know you're a natural guy, so I'm sure you heard of all these types.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, everybody around in the gym was doing them, yeah.
Yeah, and when I went to, after I won the show, Sergio Nubre and his wife, I think her name was Jacqueline. Jacqueline flew me after their home in France.
Really? Wow. That's crazy.
We were in Belgium, and I think we were in France. And I think it was Belgium. But it's Belgium or France. I think it was France. We fly out there.
Uh-huh.
I went out. A buddy of mine came. He had introduced me to all these other type of drugs, but more cutting type of like metabolism drugs, like thyroid.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I had been taking thyroxine, which was brutal to take, and I'll tell you how you take thyroxine. But Plethorol, Triacana. Triacana came in a chute, and it also came in a cream.
Okay.
And Plethorol, and you know, and it was really wild drugs. And he turned me on. He sent me home with a whole bunch of this stuff.
Wow.
When I was hanging out with Serge, I'm like, man, you're eating. You get up in the morning and you're eating like 4 buttered croissant rolls, bread rolls, and a cup of. And he's like, yeah. So I'm like, he's like, well, what do you eat? And he still had his protein, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I don't know. No one told me to eat fucking bread rolls in the morning. Like, well, what are you taking to cut? I'm like, oh, well, nothing. I said, I take thyroxine. I take Anavar. What's that other thyroid? Thymucase. You know.
Yeah, thymucase. Yeah, I remember that.
Thyrolol. You know, whatever. He's like, oh, no. You got to take this. And he showed me. And I was like, oh, wow. And I remember Plethorol was like this little blue. This actually was a big blue red pill. It was like a uh-huh. burgundy color pill. And it used to come in like a ream where you push it out of a thing, you know?
Oh, really? And, okay.
And the other drugs he gave me had like, it would come in the powder and then mm-hmm. the solution. And then it came with a little saw and you saw it off the top of the bottle.
Okay. Yeah.
With a saw. And then you extract it with the needle and you gave yourself the shot. Well, when we were taking the thyroxine, that was brutal because you had obviously somebody. Like, I would take the stuff by myself, but mm-hmm. stuff like that you couldn't take from yourself because it was too thick. It was like molasses.
Oh, wow. Really?
And the pain was on 10.
Jeez.
It was going really, really, really slow.
Uh-huh.
And when we knew we had to take it, it was always a big deal because we were like, okay, we're going to take it Wednesday, like at 5 o'clock. Everybody was like, fuck, who's going to go first? We're like, let's pull straws. Because it was that painful to take that drug.
Yeah.
It hurt. It burned. And it was thick. And it went in hard. And then we used to take White Ace, which was a drug dispersion.
Yeah.
To try to break all the other crap that was in your system. Yeah. And then so we experimented with a lot of stuff. And a lot of stuff worked. And then for me personally, and I can't speak for everybody else and I won't, but it kind of hit me one day. And I said, why do these steroids work? Like, why? Like, I can't mm-hmm. understand. And I realized from hearing it from Alec, other guys, and I just a little research that you could do without internet at that point. You know what I mean?
Right. You didn't have the internet.
Steroids make cells grow.
Hmm.
Well, you know what? It's not prejudice. Cells are going to grow, right?
Right.
Well, muscle cells, and right. Think about this. Tumors, cysts, cancer, cells grow.
Yeah.
It's not going to say, oh, we're only going to make your biceps grow.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, you know, because then there was a drug called Aceclin, and that came in. They used to put that right into each body part.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was extravagant at that day. But I said, man, I this is for me, you know, and I wasn't disparaging anybody because I was just as much into it as anybody. But
mm-hmm.
my music had been calling me for a long time anyway. So it was just time for me to kind of bow out gracefully, you know, and I said, I don't want to take this stuff anymore. And I did it, like I said, I think the 1981.
Okay.
When I won Teenage USA in 79, everybody said, you got to go into the Teenage America. It was only like 2 weeks out.
Uh-huh.
Something like that. And I didn't want to go in. I won because I lost to Teenage USA 78. I came back and won it in 79, which is a big accomplishment. And I lost. I lost to Lee Haney.
Yeah, I'm looking at the results. That was the one that Lee Haney won in 79, yeah.
Yeah, and I came fourth in my class. Listen to me. First of all, I could have never beat Lee Haney, but I could have given him a run for his money, right?
Uh-huh.
But here's the difference. I was flat. I didn't want to be there. I was miserable, and mm-hmm. I didn't care. I had won, but I wanted to win in 78. And mm-hmm. 79, and I didn't care about that 2 weeks later.
Yeah,
which was September. The show was what it was.
Okay.
I didn't care. I didn't care. I didn't want to win. And you got to go in. You'll hold two national titles. Then other people were saying, there's no way they're going to give it to you twice. I said, why not? And then they said, I don't want to do this anyway. What am I going to go there for? I won.
Yeah.
If I lose,
yeah.
I'm a loser. And I got kind of pushed into doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Peer pressure and all the guys, we're going to go together, you're going to win, because we didn't even know who Lee Haney was at the time.
No, nobody did. Yeah.
So he was just a guy, and then he showed up, and I said, I saw him, I'm like, wow. How did he be that guy? If anything, I said his calves weren't very good. He didn't have any real calf development at those days.
Right.
You know, I remember him being top heavy.
Okay.
I remember saying, okay, I got some balance. But I didn't even come close to him anyway, so it didn't matter. So the point was, I was, you know, trying to figure out a way to kind of, and everybody knew, oh, that's the current guy, that's Joey Folco. He's the guy, Joe Folco, that's the guy who won the teenage.
Yeah.
So I was the man to beat.
Right, right.
You know, but I didn't have the goods. Look, I couldn't have beat Lee Haney on my best day, but I could have gave him, I could have been, wow, because I stood next to him.
Yeah.
They were comparing us back and forth. You know, that thing went on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Did you get compared for any body part awards? Because they were doing the body parts there, right?
I don't remember. You know, I don't remember.
Yeah.
I just remember it was a blur. I didn't want to be there. I felt mm-hmm. flat. I couldn't get a pump.
Yeah.
I was withdrawn. I don't even know where that show was. I remember leaving, going home saying, I'm so glad this is over.
Yeah.
I just want to go home. I don't want to do this anymore. I was, John, I was done. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So you basically did what you wanted to do, which was win that Teenage USA, and then this was like something you were just pushed into.
Yeah, because like I said to you earlier, I wanted to be a muscle man, and I think I achieved that. I think for mm-hmm. a little while, I was considered a muscle man.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
Look, I've played and written songs with Julian Lennon, John Lennon's son. I've played with some top musicians in the world, a musician, Muhammad Ali smacked me in the face. I tried out for the New York Yankees.
Did you really? When was that?
On the field. Yep. Yeah. That was in like 80, 83-ish.
Okay.
I played with Carl Perkins, who wrote Blue Suede Shoes. I sang Blue Suede Shoes with him.
Well, so tell me a little bit about your singing career. How'd you get into that? Were you into singing when you were a bodybuilder too?
Yeah, well, what happened was I got into singing in 1968. My father won $500 in like a he was at work and he won $500 Christmas time, and he bought my brother his guitar and his amp. Actually, in 67, and then 68, the summer comes because my father buys it for a Christmas present. He bought him an amplifier, a reverb rocket tube amplifier with a Hackstrom 3 guitar with a microphone, you know, and the summer comes, and my mother says to my brother, Anthony, you have to take your brother. He wanted me to babysit. He goes, Mom, I'm going to play music with my friends in the garage. I'm not bringing him. Because I was a kid. You're bringing your little brother. You're bringing your brother. So when he took me to this garage up the block, and
right.
the kids were jamming in the garage. And I remember the smell of the tube amplifiers and the drums, and there was a guy there who had a light blue guitar, and his name was Eddie Gregg, and I'll never forget it. And I remember saying, I want to be that guy.
Hmm.
And that was it for me. And I saw my brother pull out the guitar. I'm like, man, I want to be that guy. I couldn't get past the music thing. It was so in my soul.
Wow.
So I started teaching myself and playing all these instruments. And again, bodybuilding came my way. I did well, but I got out. And like I said, 81-ish, even though we owned the gym that we opened up a family. So I had the opportunity to go on the road with an Elvis impersonator sometime in like 86, I think it was.
Okay.
80, and that I didn't need much of a push. Because I always played in bands since I'm a kid.
Yeah.
Since the 70s. I always played in a band. But it was just like, it was like hack. It was a hack band, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then when I took to the road full time, I never turned back.
Wow. So how long did you do that for, Joe?
I'm doing it to this day.
To this day. Wow. No kidding. Yeah, that's amazing.
I play in a band right now with me and my four children. We're like the real Partridge Family.
Really? Wow.
If you go to thefulcos.com, you'll see my website where my two older kids are on there now. And the two older kids are just doing a whole bunch of new stuff right now. But you'll see, it's a serious band, man. And I have four virtuoso musicians, my kids. And they're absolutely world-class players. And I don't use that term loosely, believe me.
Uh-huh. Thefulcos.com.
You go to thefulcos.com, and it's a real band, man. And in matter of fact, it's great.
Wow, that's awesome.
I get to make my living playing music with my kids.
So how old are your kids now? How many kids? You got four kids, right?
Okay, so I have my four children. My oldest, her name is Joey. She's 22. That's the girl who's into the bodybuilding.
Right.
My son Jesse is 20 years old. My daughter Stevie is 16. And my son Tyler, who's our drummer, Stevie's a singer and percussionist and songwriter. Tyler is going to be 14 on Friday.
Okay. And they're all in the band?
They're all in the band.
Wow. Yeah, I'm looking at them now. You got beautiful kids.
Thank you. Yeah, and they're so talented, man. They sing, they play, they write. Hey, look, man, let me tell you, I never thought that I'd be in a rock band at 58 years old. Never left making money, making a living.
Right,
cracking out a living with your kids.
Yeah.
It's not a very good living, but I wouldn't change it. If more money would be great, but just to play music full time.
Yeah.
It's how blessed, you know?
Yeah. And they love it. The kids love it.
Oh, they love it, man. It's all them. You know, they push me now. You know, they're absolutely, and they're so good at it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I had no idea you were a singer until Lonnie pulled you out with your daughter and had you guys do a duet.
Oh, yeah, man. I've written 300 songs. I played with some of the tops. I played with John Sebastian from The Loving Spoonful. Worked with him, John Sebastian from The Loving Spoonful. I recorded with him. Older guys. I play piano. I play guitar. I play bass.
Mm-hmm.
I play harmonica. I've been doing it since I'm a kid. I've been doing that more than the bodybuilding. Like I said, bodybuilding I was good at, and I loved it so much, but I got a little scared with the steroids.
Yeah.
And I probably could have went on to do some really great stuff.
Yeah.
But I've always been smitten with the older look.
Mm-hmm. Like the classical look.
Like the classic, like I think of like Samir Benoot, and I think of Frank Zane, and even, you remember Cal Skalzak?
Oh, yeah, I love Cal Skalzak, yeah. Okay, he was one of my favorites.
He's one of my favorites. I remember seeing him going, man, he's a little bit of like everything.
Meaning
today and yesteryear, you know?
Yeah,
now you gotta like Samir, to me, is, to me, in my personal opinion, is probably the best of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because I look at him and I can't find any flaws. Like, he's just a total package.
Yeah.
Another guy who's amazing, who never really hit that top mark, is Joe Nazario.
Oh, yeah. That's a great name.
Joe just had perfect symmetry, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a good-looking guy. He had that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was like Superman. When I used to walk in the gym, I was like, he was one of my heroes, man.
Oh, he trained at Mr. America?
Yeah, and he was very calm, very quiet. He was a gentleman, and he would do his workout. And Joe always did very short and quick movements. Like, Joe's movements went against everything you were supposed to, or we heard you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
And that's when you realize Joe does what works for Joe.
Right.
You know, because I don't know if there's a right way or a wrong way. I walk into the gym today with my daughter. I see people doing some shit. I'm like, why would you do that? But,
right.
You know, I don't want to be that guy, because the minute you become a know-it-all and you, that's not the, you sound like your father. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like I don't want to be that guy. Because I always try to teach my kid to have an open mind. Maybe there is new technology and new ways. But again, for me, with the bodybuilding thing, it always gets down to, it's just simple, man. Why are you making it complicated?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it really, really is. Like, people say to me, what's the secret? How do you eat right and work your ass off? That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you, I don't know. Like, look at the basic, like, there are some basics, right? Bench press.
Yeah.
Bench press. You want to pull over his bench press, leg curls, leg extensions. You know, tricep. Yeah, it's simple stuff.
Just the basics, right?
If you do enough of them to failure, and you're eating a lot of protein,
yeah,
you're pretty much going to be as good as you want to be.
Right, right.
or as good as your, I guess, your DNA will let you be.
Right, right.
You know that, and so I don't. You know, that's why you know I earlier spoke about the apparatus and the machines. I walk into the gym with my daughter now, and I'm like, let's just go home. Please, let's just do this at home.
Did you follow the sport at all, Joe, after you stopped competing? Did you watch what
not
was going
all.
On?
Not no? at all. I
wow, totally, you're just totally done with
yeah,
it, huh?
Yeah, man, and listen, I was in it, man. Believe me, I was in it big time. But I
yeah.
was so immersed in the music, and I was traveling. And let me tell you, I spent a lot of years overseas. You know, and you got to remember, this is all before the internet.
Yeah.
So there was nothing to really follow. Like, I didn't walk into a store in Germany and Switzerland and France and buy a bodybuilding magazine.
Mm-hmm.
The sport now is, as you know, come on, man, it's totally changed.
Totally, yeah.
And a lot of the old school guys are really down on the new look. You
mm-hmm.
know, the guys with their stomach is kind of protruding, their abs are there, but they're...
Right.
And I'm kind of on the fence, because I look at these new guys and I'm like, yeah, but the guy's pretty fucking awesome looking, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever he's doing, like, it's really working.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the classic look. I get it. But can you take anything away from that guy?
Mm-hmm.
You look at these guys today, like, was it Phil Heath? And I guess yeah. I'm sure I'm out of touch, even now I'm probably out of touch. And Jay Cutler, I don't know who's new, but like, how could you say anything bad about that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're pretty awesome looking.
Yeah.
Like, imagine looking like that back in 78.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. Can you imagine if we would have saw that kind of physique back then?
Jay Cutler or Phil Heath walks on the stage against Arnold in
yeah.
that day. You're going to tell me he's not going to be there?
Right.
Forget about your history and when you grew up and what you did and what you like and
yeah.
that class. Come on, man. These guys are fucking awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I prefer the classic Samir look and the Frank mm-hmm. Zane look.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me. I prefer that. But to take away anything from these new guys is a crime, because
yeah, yeah.
they're putting in the time, man.
Right.
I mean, and they're doing it. I respect it, man. I saw some guys walking around Joey's show, you know, just not competitors, just, you know, and I was like, wow, how impressive, man. The guy's huge.
Yeah.
I'm not talking cut or ripped or symmetrically balanced. Forget about that. I'm just talking in general.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you could tell when a guy puts the time in.
What do you think about all the new divisions, Joe?
I don't like it.
No? Takes away from the whole...
It takes a, okay, so I got a lot to say about this, and I'm probably going to get my balls broken, but I got to tell you. it's a money grab. It's unreasonable. It takes away from the athletes.
Mm-hmm.
They don't give them the time that they need or deserve to be acknowledged. Everybody should come out on their own one time. And ladies and gentlemen, please welcome from North Fork, Virginia, blah, 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 blah. And I'm not talking like a beauty pageant, but where you say, where they're from, where they train, how long they've been doing it, and please give a big round of applause and let them have that 2 minutes of posing, whatever, to shine.
Right, right.
And then you put them into categories, and you split them up, and you let them compete.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, It's a clusterfuck. It's 300 competitors. Everybody paid $150 to enter. Do the math. It's $50,000, $60,000 coming through that door, plus the vending space, plus the people paid admission for prejudging, plus the audience participation you're going to pay to get in. It's bullshit, man.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, because if I'm in the gym and I'm breaking my balls and I'm training and I'm dieting, and my family comes all the way down to see me and I brought 10 people, my mother's there, I feel like it's a cattle call. It's like these singing shows. You know, you wait in line, and like, and the judges are good. Look, and I'm not diminishing the reality of the sport, but I'm diminishing is the production of it.
Yeah.
I mean, the songs are on, the songs are off. It's not really the guys, it's generic music. They're just playing kind of a track behind them. That's bullshit, man.
Right.
Part of the whole thing was, hey, dude, where are you getting your trunks? Where are you buying your gym trunks from? What song are you going to post to? And we were like, I don't know, man. I got like three songs. Let me give you my three routines. Tell me what you think. So we would get into the gym, and we would shut the lights, and we would play those three or four songs. Dude, go with the first song. It's so much better. Because the posing, John, think about this. You get into the gym, and you're bulking up, and it takes you years, and you're getting huge, and then all of a sudden you start cutting up. Your diet changes. Your life changes. You're getting ready. You're getting ready to do one thing, to show people what you look like. That's the sport when you show. That's the spectator part of the sport.
Right.
So now people come in, they get dressed up, they had a couple of cocktails and drinks, they're regular people. They walk into that place, into the theater, and you're ready to take that stage. That's your time.
Yeah.
That's, you have to pose to show what you've done.
Right.
And there's none of that, man. It went out the fucking window.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw my daughter walk out in line with 50, 60 competitors in her class, in her division, whatever the group was, the bikini part of it. They're all over the stage. And Lonnie was amazing because he was like so professional, keeping everything running smooth and moving the right way.
Yeah.
I was like, thank God for that guy. It just seemed too complicated and was just too many people. It's going to have that many people, have it over the course of 3 days.
Yeah.
And have it, dude, everybody should come out. Please welcome the medium class, whatever, you know, weight class, medium class in this division. Everybody walks out, right? Now go backstage. Now please welcome number one from, you know, French Lick, Indiana. Please welcome, you know, John Smith. And he walks out and he poses to his song.
Right, right.
Now he gets off. He's welcome contestant number two, Bobby Mercer. He's coming, whatever, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't win, at least you had your moment.
You had your moment.
Yeah.
You had your experience of being up on the stage, too.
Dude, that's what it's about, the athletes.
Yeah.
They're making about the patrons, and it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really not. You know, in a baseball game, it's about the audience. You pay to get in. You want to see. You want to be entertained. But it's really not that. You know, if the thinking is right. You know, I'd rather see, if it's about money, then the reality of it is, I'd rather see it's $1,000 to join, but they're only having 50 people collectively compete. Or $500, pick a number. But, you know, this is just like, I who's who? Everybody's pumping up backstage. You don't know who's, it's just, it was so impersonal, if you will. And that's just my opinion, man. I experienced it twice already. And
yeah.
That's just how I feel. Sorry.
Yeah. And that's coming from a perspective of a guy who did it in the 70s when it was different.
But yeah. Look, when we went out, we did our routine and you heard your music start.
You
worked for weeks on the walk from the back to the stage. When was the song going to start? When you were on the podium, you were up on a little podium. You knew how much room you had. You knew how. I walk into these last two shows, and there's people talking, milling around, and the lights are on in the theater. It's like, this isn't a fucking show. It's supposed to be a show.
Right,
make it
right.
A show. Make it theatrical.
Yeah.
I would have had videos being shown before, the history of bodybuilding. I would show how it started. I would have educated people how it used to be. I would have made it so where, like, wow, this is like the World Series. I would have had the national anthem. I would have had the anthem play before the event.
Yep.
You have to be in your seat ready to go by 8 o'clock or you're not getting in that room because you will not disrupt the athletes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the hardest sport in the world.
Right.
You're changing your body.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the theater aspect of it is gone, right?
Gone. There's no more entertainment value with the theater aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
mm-hmm.
the word. It's yeah. got to be theater-esque, man. You got to make it like we are going to show you some athletes tonight, ladies and gentlemen, that are going to blow you away.
Yeah.
You're going to see a transformation. And then, you know, even if you showed like a video of like how somebody started and where they, like, how did they do that? What, like, that's, I would love to see that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a tutorial and a 3-minute presentation.
Yeah.
But you want people cheering and you want to get people excited. And all that was just number five, and the guy walks out, and then the 30 people walk out and turn around. Okay, thank you, girls. Like, my daughter was on this thing for 7 seconds.
Yeah, doesn't it seem like the audiences back then, too, were much more knowledgeable about the sport, about the bodies, and about, you know, what bodybuilding was?
Yeah, because there were people who were engulfed in it. They weren't just enthusiasts. They were in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they wanted to see. Let me tell you, when we went to the show, and again, I'm sounding like my father, like an old guy. We were dressed up. We were aware of the fact that even though we might not have competing that day, we were in the sport, and so we approached it that way. And here's another thing. The trophies were huge.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, and they were displayed when we walked in the theater. I you know, I don't know if you know this, I produced like 2 or 3 bodybuilding shows.
Oh, you did? Okay. I didn't know that. Yeah.
I used to have a big display with a velvet tablecloth on it, and I displayed all the trophies. So when the competitors walked in, it was like, wow, man, did I train hard enough? Because I didn't want to win one of those, man.
Right, right.
They were like 5-foot trophies.
And wow, yeah.
They were all on a table. And it said first class, you know, first place, second place, third place, overall winner. And it mm-hmm. said best arms, most muscular, best legs, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, fuck, man, I want to win that. And you could see how robust and fat it was. It was like, oh, my God, there's the prize. Even though the prize was the title, you know, and your own association with how far you've come. But let's face it, man, to win a trophy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like it's just a whole different mindset to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
It puts it in and so now they got these little plaques, and that's fine. So, and I think the winner's got a sword or something.
Right, right.
I mean, you could buy that fucking sword at a flea market, man.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry if I sound like hardcore, but that's just how I feel, you know.
Yeah,
I'm old school, and this is what, you know, you want different opinions, I guess. And I'd like to see it go back a little bit of the old way.
Yeah, me too.
And where it's more, you know, it's predicated on, it's about the athlete's time.
Mm-hmm.
Time is money. I know, but there's ways to do it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And let them come out and show. I want to know where this guy's from. I want to know where, you know, a little bit about him.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Then I can give you the guy's history in 20, 30 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
Who he was, where he started, where he's from, blah, 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 blah. He's a family of 4. He's a father. The guy's been training for 10 years. He trains out of New York City. Please put your hands together, but, you know, John
Wilson. Yeah. Boom. Right, right, right.
And there he is. And they're like, wow, that's our man. That's our guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's so true, because I just saw a show not too long ago, and that's what they're doing. Like, okay, competitor number 1, and they say their name. Competitor number 2, and nothing. And it's just boom, 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 boom. And I was wondering, what is this audience thinking about this show? Like, these people who have never seen a show before and they're coming here, what are they thinking about this? You know, what are they getting out of it?
Okay, let me ask you, I'm going to ask you an honest, personal question, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're John Hanson, right? You walk into a theater, and it's you, your history, and you're there with your wife, your friends, whatever, your family, and you're going to attend one of these shows.
Mm-hmm.
And as you walk in, you didn't take your seat yet because there's no real seat. You kind of sit where you want. It's prejudging, right? Which is the place where the real reality of where you're going to win is really happening, let's face it. Come on, the judges know. You know that. So mm-hmm. it's about time. And all of a sudden, some guy comes out, and he's not very good, and he's only been training a year or 2, and he's maybe 58 years old in the older division, and he's orange, and you know he's not going to win anything. do you really care? You're not giving him the respect of the time watching him because it's just uninteresting to you. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't set it up that way.
Right.
They didn't set it up that way for this man.
Yeah.
Set it up, man. He's only been training a year. He's 58. He's a father. Jesus. He works at so-and-so gym. He's a guy that's so into, you know, you make it exciting.
Yeah.
Let him shine.
All yeah.
All of a sudden, you're going to perk up and go, wow, man, that's great that this guy does that.
Yeah, exactly.
And let his family say, wow, that's daddy. That's so-and-so out there. And then the crowd goes crazy. And you know what? Even in prejudging, why shouldn't the lights be shut?
Right.
Event.
Right, right.
Why,
absolutely.
Why isn't it handled like a Broadway play?
That's like when they hold these shows in, they'll have a big expo, and then they'll put the stage over to the side of the expo, and then they have it with the lights on and everything. There's no theater aspect to it at all.
None. And that was the thing I noticed right off the get-go, and I said to my daughter, you sure you want to do this again? She doesn't know any better.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, I said, it's changed. She says, what do you mean it's changed? I said, it's not a fucking bodybuilding show. It's a cattle call. People running around looking orange, and now you got to sign up for the tan, and they
pay it. Yeah.
I mean, I think that could be a good thing, and you know, because if it's a better product,
definitely easier. Yeah, remember we used to have to do it ourselves.
Yeah, I was using Nivea with food coloring. You know, there was a whole bunch of ways to do it.
Yeah.
And I like that aspect of it, but
there
doesn't seem to be as much really any organizational prowess to the event and the moment for each particular athlete.
Yeah.
And they are athletes, bro.
I know. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
Every morning, every rep, every piece of fucking chicken, every egg white, everything you've done, every cardio, whatever, man, you get to the dance. You want to dance.
Yeah. Listen, I get so pissed off when even other bodybuilders say it's not a sport. It's just an event. You know, like a beauty show or something. I'm like, no, this is definitely a sport.
Exactly. Exactly right. And that is the one thing that I recently discovered as a pet peeve. So, you know, my daughter wants to do it. So obviously I'm going to support it.
Yeah.
And I said, man, I'd love to put on my own show again with the right budget behind it to do it. But where the athletes are my number one priority. And the trophies are going to be won are going to be really like, man, I want to win. And I would even show those fuckers before the event. What's on the line.
Yeah.
You know what you can win, man. Why? It's important because it does matter.
Right. Yeah, I promoted like 15 shows myself. And what I used to do was when we had the overall winner, after we gave him the award, I'd come up on stage with a microphone and interview him. You know, and say, how long you been doing this? And, you know, one lady would say, I did it for my dad. He just passed away 6 months ago. And then the whole audience goes, wow, you know, we didn't know that. Another guy would say, you know, I lost 100 pounds this last 2 years or whatever. You don't know that stuff unless you talk to them or unless you find out the information from them.
And you want to know that.
Right.
You want to know that. You want to feel that. You want to make the eight. Look. You know the sport is a wry sport, right? We want to get people engaged. And you want them to get engulfed. And you want to know, look, Derek Jeter was a great ball player. And you knew his personality. People wrapped his head around who he was, right? Why wouldn't it be like Arnold did that in his own right, love him or hate him? Because there was personality.
Yeah.
You knew Arnold's personality. You knew who he was. And And I'm using old school names because there was a personality and a character behind the character.
Yeah.
And Pumping Iron, the movie, did that and shouldn't be any different for these athletes.
Right. Absolutely.
So
I agree.
If it's a time deficit, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, prejudging is wonderful. We had it in my day. There's a way to combine it together, man, and turn it into an event.
Yeah.
And have it over three days. I don't know, but right now, one day, 300 competitors. You got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I know.
You can't tell me people aren't getting overlooked. I'm not buying it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's not getting they're not getting the attention they deserve for all the work they put in.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not really promoting bodybuilding shows anymore, but someday I may, and I would change the whole spectrum of that particular show. And you know what else, too? When I competed, right, it was a names associated with Mr. Eastern Seaboard, Mr. Suburban, Mr. Metropolitan.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr.
Yeah.
Stage USA. It meant something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the names are something, something classic. So what do you say who you are?
Right, right.
Are you Mr. Something?
Yeah.
I know. No, like, well, what did you win? The so-and-so, so, well, I don't understand. You mean you're not Mr. Universe?
Yeah.
Well, no. I'm Mr., you know, whatever. The names don't work.
I know. Yeah, I had that discussion with, remember John Brown? He won the NAVA Universe a few times. And
he's got his kids are into sport.
Yeah, his kids are in football, yeah. So I talked to him about it, and he was at a point where he was trying to win the Mr. America, and he wasn't doing that well. And then Serge Nubre invited him over to Europe to compete, and then he went over there and he won Mr. World like three times. He won Mr. Universe two times. But he was aware of that too. He said, it's so important to have that title, you know, because now, like, Real Sports just did a segment on him and his sons. And so they say, yeah, he's a Mr. Universe winner. You know, he said, now, if I would have won something like you said, this classic, that, or championship or whatever, you know, now he's got a title. And he says, Mr. Universe, everybody's ears perk up. Oh, wow, you're Mr. Universe? You know, that means, he said that title means so much to the general public, you know?
Here's one, and I agree. And here's something to consider. You're not into bodybuilding, and you want to make it a household name and a household sport, like what we've always wanted to do, right?
Right.
Now I say to you, hey, man, what did you win? And the guy says, I won the Jay Cutler Desert Classic. Now, you don't know anything about bodybuilding.
Right. You don't know who Jay Cutler is.
Who's Jay Cutler?
Yeah.
But, well, he was Mr. Olympia. Okay? So
yeah.
What happens in, and you say this, what happens in the desert? So what do you mean? Well, is it a car show? what is the Desert Classic? Like, is it like you grow pineapples in the desert? Like, what is it?
right.
Like, what is it? Like, people don't know it. You don't know it. It's a bodybuilding title. They would say, ready? Oh, you mean like Mr. America?
Yeah, right.
You see? So they would correlate it to what it is. What
right.
It is now, what it isn't. Well, man, give it a name. Even if it's a regional thing.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Main Street. Okay. I got it. You're Mr.
Right.
Main Street. You won.
Right.
Okay. The best bodybuilders on Main Street. You know what? It's a title.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So I don't think you should lose the moniker of the Mr. and Mrs. You know, I, that's just me.
I agree. Yeah. It was more fun back then.
Well, that's how I feel. But, you know, I'm an idiot. What do I know? You
know? No, I agree with you, Joey. Well, Joey, listen, it was great having you on the show, and thanks for taking the time to talk about the good old days. And good luck with your singing group and your career and with your family and stuff. That looks great.
Thank you. Yeah, they can go to thefolkos.com to see what I'm doing tonight. And it was an honor and a pleasure to speak with you. And you're great, man. And it means so much to have gotten on your show, man. It's wonderful.
Oh, thank you, Joey. It was a great pleasure to talk to you, too, because I remember you from when I was younger. And I remember seeing pictures of you and that Teenage Mr. America and the Teenage USA. So it was great to finally meet you and talk to you.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you again.
All right, Joey. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks to Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine for sponsoring this episode of the program. And now we will read, as I promised, another article from one of these old school bodybuilding magazines I have. This is from Iron Man magazine when Terry Rader and his wife Mabel Rader published it. It's from January 1979, and it is about the 1978 Mr. Olympia. And it's called Zane Wins Mr. Olympia, written by our friend Roger Schwab, who was a judge at the Mr. Olympia back in those years. Here we go. So it reads, it was several moments past 3:30 on this Saturday afternoon when announcer Len Boslin spoke to an anxious, overflowed audience. Ladies and gentlemen, the lightweight contestants in the 1978 IFBB Mr. Olympia contest. It is my gut feeling that within seconds of that announcement, an overwhelming percentage of onlookers realized simultaneously that Frank Zane had defended his title spectacularly. Zane was first to appear in the lineup, and it seemed endless seconds before the rest of the class followed him onto the stage. Zane nearly swept across the stage as if he were the only contestant. It was immediately evident that he was totally secure with his preparation. Realizing that he was near or at total perfection of his development, Zane had seemingly already mentally projected himself as the winner. This inner projection somehow seemed to grip the emotions of the onlookers. Alone on stage, Zane faced the audience standing relaxed, internally charged. He was so symmetrical, refined to a point. His abdominals, always conspicuous, were better than ever, and the whole appearance was enhanced by the richest skin coloring imaginable. Lest this article escaped its scope and centers only on the Zane mystique, let's reflect upon the competition commencing with the afternoon prejudging. There were seven challengers to Zane in the under 200-pound class, and Boyer Coe led the lineup that followed him onto the stage. The immediate audience reaction was that Coe was in superb condition, the best of his career. Boyer appeared massive and muscular, much sharper than in previous appearances this year. He weighed in at 190 pounds, several pounds lighter than in past contests. The loud approval from the audience had its impact on Boyer, and he probably knew that he would be right up there with the finalists. It is personally noted here that the Coe physique may be equated as the antithesis of Zane's physique. This comparison probably hurts Coe in the lineup. Although he appears 20 pounds larger than Frank, the size is overshadowed by Zane's sharper lines. Muhammad McAway had not been seen by most of the audience since his spectacular win here last year at the Mr. International competition. During the prejudging, his physique did not exhibit the detail of a year ago, nor did Muhammad generate the hyper stage presentation of which he is capable. Later, under the warmth of the evening spotlight, he appeared much more muscular. Overall, this was a disappointing performance for McAway. Coming out of Egypt these past several years into international competition had created great anticipation of the McAway physique. Now the sharp edge has dulled somewhat. One senses that there is another chapter left to come in his story. We shall see. Next in the prejudging lineup appeared Albert Beckles, who unfortunately we see only once a year. Time has done little to detract from Beckles' powerful build, yet he is somewhat older than most of the competitors, and this year was somewhat smoother in the torso than previously. The density of muscle remains, and the highest peak biceps will always be his. Though the coveted Mr. Olympia title will probably evade his grasp, Beckles has left his mark on the international physique scene and has lent a little class whenever he has traveled. In each report of a major competition, Ed Corney is a story in himself. Since this time, several years ago, when Corney separated himself from all the other competitors with his innovative posing routine, he has been the house favorite. Standing relaxed in the lineup, Corney was impressive, very impressive. At 44, he has the tendency to look heavy, especially in the midsection and lower back areas. This aspect is usually overlooked during the posing routine, which totally captivates the audience and makes Corney nearly appear invincible, impregnable to weaknesses. Overall competition is, however, not limited to posing. The evening audience, of course, only views the posing routine, which partly explains why, when Corney does not win a contest, there are literally near riots. This year, there was little or no heaviness, and Corney, to my eye anyway, would be right near the top, challenging all the way. Danny Padilla entered his first Mr. Olympia at around 162 pounds, reiterating what everyone has stated endlessly. Danny, when he gets it all together, will be the ultimate giant killer. The question echoes, when he gets it all together. It seems that even at varying body weights, Danny is just always a shade away from the degree of muscularity he needs to reach his pinnacle, his full potential. Today was not an exception. Though every body part blended together and he possessed the finest shape of muscle and symmetry in the entire event, the hard, sharp definition of muscle was still not quite there. Tony Emmett, in his first IFBB event, wasted no time in establishing himself as a favorite. This is a quality physique with no apparent weaknesses. Standing relaxed in a lineup or going through a polished posing display, this man is a pro. There are no overwhelming body parts, with the exception of a wide and muscular back. Everything just seems to fit together in an unusual blend of symmetry and style. If there is any criticism, it might be that a more dynamic personality or presentation on stage is needed in order to create the impact that is deserving of this fine physique. The final under 200 competitor was Bill Grant. The added 5 or so pounds to the Grant physique did not detract from the most detailed midsection in the contest. It is still surprising that those huge arms and overall muscularity still give way to a critical abuse offered about Grant's lack of leg, especially calf size. Grant possesses some very long muscle bellies in the upper arms and some very short muscle bellies in the calves. This is an hereditary factor, not subject to change. Whether or not Grant ever wins or places near the top of this major competition, he should be appreciated as a world-class physique. He, today, reacted somewhat bewildered by the audience's critical reception, and he never really seemed to get it going. A positive PR program by some of the magazines depicting Grant as the sensitive guy he really is would probably enhance his image to the contest crowds immediately. The first over 200-pound competitor was Robbie Robinson. In a previous report, I mentioned that if Robbie appeared at the Olympia as sharp as he did on May 6th at the Night of the Champions, he would be the 1978 Mr. Olympia. Such, however, was not the case. Robbie was again too smooth. He looked today still 10 pounds heavier than needed. Great roundness of muscle and Herculean size to be sure, but without that final touch of refinement, which he showed clearly in May in his finest hour. Although Robbie was the pre-contest favorite again this year, I guess that this evening's verdict would duplicate last year's heartbreaking loss. Roy Callender is improving with every competition. Standing in the lineup, he takes a back seat to no one. His upper body is massive and tremendously defined for so big a man. When and if his legs reach the maturity of his upper body, he will probably win this contest. His posing routine needs some work, but all the tools to be a winner, a big winner, are there. Dennis Tinerino looked muscular and ready. He was the 1967 Mr. America, and he was better today, 11 years later. Dennis has wide shoulders and fine abdominals. He looks and acts confident on stage, like a winner. Some felt that his upper back could be more developed and thicker. Whatever, it was good seeing him in such remarkable shape, holding his own in the highest competition. Perhaps the most improved physique over the past year was that of Roger Walker. At last year's Olympia, Walker was flat, probably not ready for this event. This year, he was improved significantly. With a much deeper tan, which enhanced a well-muscled physique, Roger was a positive force in the lineup. If he shows continued improvement over the next year, he will be reckoned with. Finally, Cal Skalak. When Cal first walked on, I said to myself, he's not going to win it. At first glance, his midsection was somewhat too smooth, and his legs, while improved, were not there with his gigantic shoulders, chest, and arms. It was only within seconds, however, when those instinctive feelings left. When Skalak starts his posing routine, his personality and the mood which he is able to create is electric. Look up the word charisma. This man has it. If he doesn't have the best physique in the world, he doesn't know it. He has the ability to excite an audience. He can present himself in so positive a way that you find yourself only seeing his strong points, never his weaknesses. By the conclusion of the prejudging, there was more than a few believing that in the conclusion, it would be Zane and Skalak. When each competitor had completed his posing routine at the evening show itself, the top six finalists were named. The six, in no particular order, were Zane, Coe, Padilla from the under 200-pound class, and Robinson, Callender, and Skalak. The final pose-off was exciting, however, not quite the intensity of a year ago. Missing from the final six were such names as Corny, Emmett, and Tinerino, who had their faithful in the audience in silence. In Corny's case, it was to some downright heresy. It felt a little empty watching that final pose down without the familiar sight of Corny turning on the whole house. Whatever, when Danny Padilla was announced for sixth place, there was no complaints. Danny had done well in his first Olympia. Next year might fully tell his tale. What happened next was unforgettable. Fifth place, Kalman Skalak. The catcalls and booing filled the auditorium. Skalak stood shaking his head in disbelief. The boos turned instantly to cheers when Skalak flashed a double biceps immediately followed by a most muscular pose. With the noise at a crescendo, the unforgettable Skalak, feet crossed, head tilted, arms stretched wide, eyes closed, as if he was letting the loud voices know that this had been his crucifixion. In the seconds following, as the others awaited their places, he left the stage. How this scene will be handled by the media will be known sooner or later. In reflection, there will be those who were there and definitely more who were not there, whose conditioned reflex will be to immediately condemn Scalak's actions. The opposing spectrum of thought, however, will see Scalak's actions as a creative momentary response to his demise this evening. Back to the final announcements. Boyer Co.'s fourth place finish duplicated the results of a year ago. The placement was, however, the only duplication. This was a new Co., silencing the small but vocal critics who sensed that his best days were behind him. Several seasoned judges confided to this reporter later that Co. had received their second place votes. Roy Callender stated to me after the contest, placing third behind Zane and Robbie is no disgrace. I agreed, reassuring him to realize that he has the guns to win, not place. Robbie and Zane were the final two, as they were 1 year ago. I felt that Robinson, as he stood there, might be counting the final moments until Zane was announced the winner. There seemed to be no sense of surprise when his thoughts became reality. He hugged Zane, the winner, and held up his hand. The seconds must have been hours to Robbie, but he handled it like the man that he is. Frank Zane is Mr. Olympia 1978. He deserved it. Just a quick anecdote. One West Coast official said to me several weeks prior to this contest that Zane couldn't win this year and he did not deserve to win last year. The fact that this official did not attend either year is not surprising. Zane tonight was a winner, a very unbelievable winner. Bill Pearl and Larry Scott gave posing exhibitions which deserve much more space than I am allotted. What a thrill to see these two great bodybuilders of the early 60s approaching their championship form. This might have been Pearl's final performance, and he was greeted by a standing ovation. I have a feeling we will see Scott again even better on the winner's dais. He, too, received a long standing ovation. In the preliminary event, Joe Nazario triumphed over Carlos Rodriguez and Roger Callard and the balance of the field for the Mr. International event. My opinion is that the Mr. Olympia competition doesn't need a second event on the card. Hopefully, in the future, the Olympia event will be contested alone on a separate day, which it deserves. So the final placings, Mr. Olympia 1978, Frank Zane first, Robbie Robinson second, Roy Callender third, Boyer Co. fourth, Kelman Scalak fifth, Danny Padilla sixth. Others in alphabetical order, Albert Beckles, Ed Corney, Tony Emmett, Bill Grant, Mohammed McAway, Dennis Tinerino, and Roger Walker. And then in the Mr. International, the lightweight class was won by Carlos Rodriguez, the excellent bodybuilder from Tucson, Arizona. Tony Pandolfo from New York was second, and John Burkholder was third. In the middleweight class, Roger Callard was first over Samir Banut, and I think that was somewhat of a controversial decision. And Frank Colta from Tampa, Florida was in third place. And then in the heavyweight class, Joe Nazario was in first place. Ben Herder, who I believe was from Canada, was second. And Ray Menser, Mike Menser's brother, was in third place. And then the overall, of course, went to Joe Nazario. So real quick now, I'm going to read this other article from John Carl Meese, How I Saw the Olympia. Wow, what a show. 13 competitors, biggest and best field of any Olympia. An analysis of the top men is as follows. Zane, bigger than 1977 and still the one with a super polished look. Best balanced physique with the fewest flaws in the contest. His arm size had increased dramatically, as well as his leg definition. He improved overall at least 25% over 1977. His wife, Christine, who was his best critic, admitted that he was in his best shape ever. His win was a popular choice with the audience and one of the few that I concurred with. Boyer Co. It was immediately noticeable that Boyer had improved significantly over 1977, and he was Zane's competition in the under 200-pound class. Boyer's weak points, as noted last year, were no abs, posing too slow and not flowing, and a lack of more muscles in his back. This year, at 190 pounds, he was super defined, his posing outstanding, his back more muscular, and his abdominals visible and improving. He had the most outstanding arms in the contest. Corny, the master poser, non-parallel. However, he had not corrected his weak points of more calf and thigh definition. His posing is the true presentation of the state of the art of bodybuilding. a crowd pleaser with super muscularity in his front torso, he received the greatest applause at the nighttime show. McAway, bigger than 1977, but he seemed awed by his competition in his first Olympia. Not as defined as last year, but thicker with more dense muscle. Excellent proportion, he needs to combine this year's size with last year's definition and cuts. Padilla, super balance and outstanding legs, best calves in the contest. He too was awed by the competition, and his torso needs more muscularity, front and back. With continued training, he can bring home the Sandow Trophy. Grant, great combination of size and muscularity, improved over 1977, but he still needs more triceps, calves, and leg biceps. Emmett, a surprise entrant from England, good size and excellent muscularity, and what a back and legs. His weak point is shoulder width. With more size, he could win his class. A very charming fellow in our discussions. Beckles, not as much definition as previous years. Tremendous arms, still needs more legs to balance out his physique. Not fully prepared for this year's show. Heavyweight, over 200 pounds, only five this year. Next year, probably three or four more. Casey Viator, Mike Mentzer, Bertel Fox, and Dave Johns. Robinson weighed 207 pounds for the show, down over 20 pounds from last year. He appeared light and extremely muscular at this weight. However, I think his best weight is 216 pounds, which is the best combination of size and muscularity for his frame. He still needs to work on his calves and his posing. He forgot his poses in the middle of his routine. His upper body is just unbelievable. Walker, the most improved man in the contest, big, muscular, and the best balanced physique of the heavyweights. He can improve even more, and he has a super back. He needs more muscularity in his front torso. Tinarino, improved tremendously over 1977. His weak points are physique presentation and his back. His back still needs more muscle, and he needs a better posing routine. Scalak, two major weaknesses. One is obviously noticeable. His upper body is so fantastic, it dwarfs his legs, which are also not cut enough, and thereby he is out of proportion. His second weakness, again related to his fantastic upper body, is that his rib cage, chest, and back are too big for his shoulder width. He had the best arms and the best chest in the contest. However, he is not symmetrical, which is what it takes to win the Olympia. He was one of the crowd favorites with his posing. Calendar, once again, he's a huge physique, but not as defined as last year. He needs more definition in his upper back and his thighs. Also, his calves are woefully weak in proportion to the balance of an otherwise terrific physique. Super abdominals, chest, and arms. In summary, you might ask, how would I pick them? Well, I wasn't judging, but I was mainly taking photos, and I didn't get the comparisons I needed since these fellows are all super physiques. However, first, Zane. Second, Coe. Third, Robinson. Fourth, Walker. Fifth, Padilla. And sixth, Tinarino. I'll see you at Columbus next year at the Olympia, the best bodybuilding contest in the world. All right, that was great. And as you guys may know, I was at this contest. I was 15 years old in 1978. It was my second Olympia, and I was blown away by the contest. I agree with these guys. I think Zane was a clear winner. It's funny when you read articles today and people say Zane shouldn't have won. If you were there, you would agree that Zane really did have a really finished physique. He acted like a winner. What Roger Schwab said was really true. He had this mindset where he really felt and looked like a winner. He projected confidence, and his charisma on stage was really something to see. So I agree that he was a clear winner. And it's notable that both of these articles, both of these writers, both say that Zane won easily. I remember Boyer Coe being really fantastic. I remember he was so improved from the year before. When he did his posing routine, he looked just amazing. He has those patented Boyer Coe shots that no one else can duplicate. Robbie, I thought, looked really good. Roger Schwab said he was a little too smooth. I don't remember him being smooth. He seemed much more ripped than the year before. Like John Carl Meese said, he was 20 pounds lighter. I didn't realize it was that much of a difference. But I do remember I thought Zane was better. So Robbie maybe wasn't at his best. I didn't see that night of the champion show, but I did feel like Zane was a winner, and I felt like Robbie thought Zane was a winner also. The highlight for me was my idol, Cal Scalak. I remember when he posed, as Roger said, he really brought the house down. It was like him and Corny got the most applause of anybody in the contest. The place was just absolutely going crazy. Cal, when he hit those arm shots and those chest shots, the place was just going absolutely nuts. Those muscular poses. He was definitely the crowd favorite. And I remember even like when I was 15 years old taking pictures, you could see all the people around me standing up, cheering. Like people were on their feet cheering this guy. He was really something to see. And I'm so, so happy that I got a chance to see Cal Scalic, my idol, when I was 15 years old. And I remember before the contest, he was sitting in the audience. He had a lot of people around him. He was wearing a brown sweatsuit, and he just looked totally confident. He was a really cool dude. So that was really great to see. I thought Ed Corney looked great. I thought he was improved physique from the year before, noticeably bigger. And I thought his posing routine was really cool. He did this thing where he stuck one arm straight up over his head, the other one straight out in front of him, and he rotated 360 degrees completely around like a clock. I thought it looked really cool. I thought it was very innovative. But the judges, for some reason, didn't like it. And I think Ed was seventh in the final comparisons. McAway, as I said, was much thicker, did not have the charisma that he would have later in the later years, and he didn't have the great posing. Roy Callender was very impressive, very thick, really great abs. He ended up in third place, which in this lineup was amazing. And as they said, I agree with all these guys, what they said about Dennis Tinerino, much improved. Roger Walker, really much improved. He was way off in 77. So it was really a great show. It's funny, I can't really remember Larry Scott and Bill Pearl posing that much, which I wish I could remember that. It was over 40 years ago, of course, but that was something else. I remember with Ardell and Jim Lorimer, they always had great guest posers. It was always a surprise who they would bring out. I remember they had Lisa Lyon, I think, in 1979. She was like the first woman bodybuilder. I think they had Franco one year in 79 also. He was coming back from that leg injury. So they always had surprises. They had Dave Draper one year. Reg Park was another year. So they always put on a great show. The atmosphere in that Veterans Memorial Auditorium was just absolutely amazing. You don't see anything like that today. And the Mr. Olympia today, it just doesn't have the same magic, same atmosphere. Maybe it had to do with the fact that I was also 15 years old. But it was a great, great time, and I hope you guys got to share it a little bit hearing these stories. So I will continue reading these stories. I also have some Muscle Mag International annual issues, which I think they came out with four of them, and I've got all four, and I grabbed those when I was in my parents' crawl space last week. So I will read some of those next week also. There was a really good article by Robert Nalon, who I'm also hoping to get on the show, and he did a great long article about Arnold visiting Australia. So I'll try to read that one next week as well. All right, guys, that is it. I hope you enjoyed the articles. I hope you enjoyed the interview. And next week, we will try to get our second anniversary show up, or we will have another interview. We'll see what happens. All right, have a great week, everybody. Thanks to Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs for sponsoring another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. See you guys next week. Take care.